Now, I've got a few more events here, but we might scatter them through the show.
Yeah, yeah. Did you have any news, Spike, or events?
No, I just wanted to, in discussing disability, I suppose I should preface that by letting people know that I had to listen to that bioethics.
Radical philosophy. Beth.
That's right.
Right here on 3CR.
Yeah, bioethics and disability. And one of the points that the speaker was, I think she was an honors student of philosophy, and she was talking about two aspects of the technology that's used to choose whether, you know, like if you can have a test before you have a baby that women can have that'll indicate whether the child will have Down syndrome or spina bifida or, you know, that whatever, and you can select. And this, philosophers are saying,
like Gattaca.
Yes, that's right. Selected babies, and you know,
you can you can tell what.
Yeah, well, you can have. I think there's. I think one test is compulsory. Actually, I think the spina bifida one's compulsory. I'm not sure, but I think people need to. And you know, people talk about cerebral palsy and stuff like that. If you remember, you know, Melbourne Cup, the strapper, Michelle Payne's brother was a strapper. Now, I'm not a huge fan of horse racing, but that was a great example of someone that can live a happy, fulfilled life without the stigma of society with a so-called disability. I suppose what I'm trying to make clear is I have a real, I suppose I've said it before, this entire concept of disability, I find it difficult. And, I'd just like to let people know that maybe it's something we as a community need to work on, that we should be listening to the individuals themselves and how they feel about their condition rather than just labelling everyone. Stella Young, had a friend, she's passed now, rest in peace, wherever she is, Stella. She was a great advocate. She had a friend who had spina bifida and a couple, Peter Singer was suggesting that it might be a good idea that some babies that have certain conditions are aborted. And she knew a woman that had a friend of hers that had spina bifida that was living a fantastic life. So perhaps we should think before we start imposing our own views about what a good life is or what happiness is, because, you know, running down the street, laughing your head off all the time isn't exactly happiness for everyone. You know what I mean? I just think it's, if we're going to use this day as a day of examining the issue of disability and homelessness and let's do it authentically and not just skate over the top of it as if, everything's fine. Because one of the things that came out of what Brian Lippman said, is the NDIS is not going to be the silver bullet. Why isn't that part of Medicare already? Why is there an adjunct or a separate health scheme for people with disabilities? If it's a health issue, why isn't it dealt with by the health system?
Because we have a fragmented system. It's not holistic, is it?
Well, that points to the way we see the world. It's sort of like the economy's up here, culture's down there, health is here, education. All these things are connected. And unless we sort of discuss it in that way, people
can't join the
dots. No, that's right. And thanks for filling the gap in for me. But if we're going to discuss these issues, let's do it in a real way, in an authentic way, not just skate over. Yeah.
And let's go to some more of our beautiful voices, hey?
Definitely.
Hi, folks. My name is Amanda Hisco, and I'm going to give you all out there a vital but very important message. For people with disabilities all around the world, to have their say and be able to stand up for their rights and also should be given a try at new skills and knowledge, and we're all out there and we've got abilities to do things. All we need is people to take off their horse glasses and see us. It's people first and ability second and disability third, and a happy International Day for all you guys out there. We want to be respected.
If you're saying to me, being a deaf woman, do I feel disabled? My answer would be no, I don't. I don't feel disabled. I have a language, I have a culture. I don't think of myself as disabled because I'm deaf. I guess when I do feel disabled is when I can't have access to anything.
I had too many troubles. I had strokes, seizures, and they said, forget it. You won't be a proper boy. I'd like to have life as it should be, because I missed 14 years of schooling. I had friends, especially girlfriends, because I missed it in school. I never had them.
We so rarely see positive representations of the sexualities of people with disability, particularly people with intellectual disability, that we don't see that in our sort of mass or popular media at all.
You're listening to 3CR Radio.
It's Jackpot Willie Clever coming to you from the deep, deep south. Well, I might be known as a common wanker, but no sirree, I'm not the investment banker. I lost a fistful on a foreign wonder. Found myself broke, down under. But hey, yeah, I'll survive.
Where you going, Grandpa?
I don't need that much in life. Sell the line, Carmen. There be a hole in the wall. With your words, take a fall. There'll be no chickens in me stall. I have a habit with Snow White, and it costs with the 7 divorces. This has been Jackpot Willie Clever coming to you from deep down south. Well, we drank VB. Yeah, VB. And we ride home the kangaroo. With a southern integrity.
You're tuned to 3CR 855 on your AM dial.
just tuned in to 3CR. Why don't you stay listening and listen in a while?
You know, I'm not a fan of what they've replaced cripple with. Special needs? Really? If there's one thing I've learnt being a cripple, it's that special is just a code word for shit. Special schools? Shit. Special buses? Shit. Special scissors? And I don't know what they thought I would have done if I'd gotten my hands on the normal kid scissors anyway. You know, it wasn't like I was going to run with them.
You're listening to 3CR. This is Billy X. Jennings of the Black Panther Party. Power to the people.
You're listening to 3CR, 855 AM on International Day of Persons with, well, they call it disabilities. I don't.
Hi, folks. My name is Amanda Hisco, and I'm going to give you all out there vital but very important message for people with disabilities all around the world to have their say and be able to stand up for their rights and also should be given a try at new skills and knowledge, and we're all out there and we've got abilities to do things all we need is people to take off their horse gloves and see us. It's people first and ability second and disability third, and a happy International Day for all you guys out there. We want to be respected.
That's beautiful. That was
Isn't it
beautiful.
Fantastic hearing those voices?
Yeah. It was, especially the voice of Tony Creedon playing Jackpot Willie Clever.
I like that tune.
Yeah, I like the tune. I also like that last voice. The perseverance, the resilience, the strength. You could hear bursting out of her and her wanting to let people know that, you know, I want to be treated with as much respect as anyone else. So hear me roar.
Did we have before we go to our telephone guest, did we have any other back announcements to make?
Well, only about the program that's coming up next.
Oh, but I think we can
wait till later.
We can wait.
Okay.
So I'll now bring in our guest. We have on the line Sharon Grenek, the Program Director of Women with Disabilities Victoria. Good afternoon, Sharon.
Good afternoon, and you've just given me a promotion. I'm the Program Manager.
Oh, oh well. Yeah, you're here with us, and that's fantastic.
Happy International Day of Disability.
Yes.
Cheers.
And I don't know if you were able to just hear some voices we were just playing whilst you were waiting.
Yeah, I did hear it. I heard Amanda and a few other voices.
Fantastic. So I'm going to hand you over to Spike, and he's going to kind of conduct the interview mainly, and Daz and I will be in the background and supporting.
Okay, great.
Hey, Sharon, how are you going?
Hi, Spike. I'm really good. Happy International Day.
Same to you. Cheers. Look, mate, thanks for coming on to the show. It's great that we were able to secure someone who works with women with disabilities, and we heard some voices. We heard Stella Young earlier.
Wasn't she fantastic?
Yeah,
really miss her.
Look,
yeah, great,
and
big loss,
definitely. And what I'd like to ask, one of the first things I'd like to ask you is this whole definition of this disability. How did the system or how do institutions come to that definition? What is the definition of disability?
Okay, I think institutions and those sorts of organisations used to, and I'll say that loosely, used to have a definition of disability as a medical definition where the impairment's the problem, and for some reason we as people with disabilities are lacking something. Maybe we're sick, we need to be fixed.
Yeah.
And it's our problem. They see the impairment first, not the person.
Yeah.
We need to change, not society.
That's right.
So that's a real problem, because if we don't, if we have that definition, nothing in the environment needs to change. So we, in the advocacy movement, we definitely use the social model of disability, where it's society's barriers that prevent people like us being part of that society. Disability is a human rights issue.
That's right.
So if we've got society as the problem, it's up to, the answer is providing social change. We need to we need society to remove those barriers, and that will enable everyone with a disability to live in the community and participate in the in society on an equal basis. So definitely the social model of disability, or the definition in a social construct, is really important. We don't need to change. The environment needs to change so we can participate.
That must be really offensive, like, growing up like that.
Oh, definitely. And then if you're a woman with a disability, you add the gender lens, we're even more disadvantaged, because we have the disability and the sex-based discrimination. That means we're even further marginalised. And women with disabilities experience much higher rates of unemployment, poverty, violence, and social exclusion, even compared to women in the general community and men with disabilities. So that's a double disadvantage.
Could you speak even more to that?
Yeah. One of the biggest issues, I guess, is violence against women with disabilities. We did a big study last year, and women with disabilities suffer higher rates of violence for longer periods than any other group. And we also have poor access to family violence services. The data and statistics are really, really shocking. So compared to women without disabilities, we're more likely to experience violence and for longer periods of time. So if I put it in context, for housing, we need to have affordable and appropriate housing. And that will have a direct effect on stopping unacceptable levels of abuse. I just think those things are really important, that we need to look at how we can ensure women with disabilities step up to the mark and are able to access things like employment, education, housing, security. Yeah, they're so important.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to ask you, Kelly asked you a really good question before I was able to get, I just wanted to ask why do you think that medical definition of disability has so much prominence over the social one that you talked about?
I think we look at the medical system, GP, not just GPs, the whole structure. We need to be fixed somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if you look at it in terms like that, society has less of a burden to do anything about things, because we need to be fixed.
Yeah.
Society doesn't. So if you use that definition, nothing has to change. We have to change, and that's just not going to happen. That's why it's really important to promote and talk about the social model of disability, that society needs to change. And certainly we want to help society to change. We certainly can lead that charge and be involved in those decision-making processes to show how things can change. It's not that hard.
So do you think, do you believe that people who are living with these challenges, do you think that they're involved they're allowed to be involved in the conversation enough?
No. Since the answer is no, simply is no. What we try to do at Women with Disabilities Victoria is to come to the table so that we're included in those decision-making processes. And I think we need to always advocate to make sure that anyone with a disability is included in any decisions that concern them. The saying, nothing about us without us, is really, really important. Really important. Because we're experts.
Yeah.
We're the experts in this area. We know what we need.
You're an expert in your own life.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Sharon, do you think that the wider society fears people with disabilities? Is there some fear factor?
I wouldn't go so far as fear. I think it's more about just lack of knowledge, worried that they're going to offend us.
Okay.
Often, there might be some sort of underlying fear factor, but I found that one of the greatest things I think about being a kid is they're really honest, and they just they call it like it is. So they'll come out and say, hey, what's wrong with your foot, your eyes, whatever it is, and they can be honest about it.
Yeah.
Where as adults we become politically correct and we're too scared to, and we might offend someone. And I think the best way to provide support is to ask us what sort of support we need. You know, like we are, as we said before, we are the experts. We know what we need.
Hmm. So do you have a problem with the fact that the NDIS scheme? Do you think that this should have been addressed a long time ago through Medicare, that people who needed that personal care should have got it through the Medicare scheme, or do you welcome the NDIS?
I certainly welcome the NDIS.
Okay.
I think it's such an exciting time that people will have direct control over their packages, and they will be able to use those packages, use the money from the packages in the way they want to, and that's just, they're putting them in charge. It's just wonderful.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to be some hiccups with it, I'm sure, and that's why it's great there is a pilot. But we need to make sure that those packages are going to meet the needs of the people with disabilities, that it's going to include what they need, and they're going to have the money and the resources to do what they want. And that's just, it's fantastic. It's just, yeah, it's very exciting. As long as we look at things like their we've got to make sure that their plans or their life plans,
yep,
cater, the resources provided will enable them to live a fulfilling life, the life that they're choosing to live.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you know what mechanisms are in place right now to ensure that the people that the NDIS is set up to assist, that they will have input into the development of programs, the implementation of programs, and the evaluation of those programs? Do you know what mechanisms? Yeah,
I'm not directly involved, so I can't really comment on that, because I'm not directly involved. But I think the NDIA is addressing all that. I think it's really important that we don't forget about advocacy, supporting,
yeah,
the person with a disability, to make sure that their voice is heard for what they want and what they need. And I just think, look, I think more and more people with disabilities are going to want jobs, want to live in the community, want housing close to public transport. So the infrastructure of the community is going to need to change as well, so that people on NDI on these packages can be part of that community.
Can you let people know what sort of changes to building codes that should be there, so that, you know, people with that may be in wheelchairs or have difficulty getting around the house?
Yep.
The extra costs and that sort of stuff, how much more difficult is it for people that are living with, I don't know, are you comfortable with the word disability?
Look, I am. I think it's I don't think we address the issue of not just accessible housing, but affordable housing.
Yeah.
And the two have to go together. Housing's got to be near accessible transport. There's no use having an accessible and affordable house in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
Because if there's no public transport, because a lot of people with disabilities don't have their own, don't drive, they need accessible transport. So we've got to look at having the accessible and affordable houses placed in areas that are going to be part of the community, not at whoop-whoop, where they're more socially isolated. We've asked a number of times, we're asking for the building code to change, and for a start, just three basic changes. An accessible path of travel from the street, the parking area, to the house. We need doors, corridors, and living spaces accessible so that on the entry level. So it's really important. So not only if I'm in a wheelchair, but if I have a friend in a wheelchair, they can come and visit me.
Yeah.
And we need to look at making sure the bathroom, the shower, and the toilet that most people use are reinforced with grab rails. Reinforced walls. So you need to have grab rails later on. We need to make sure that lower level is accessible. Yeah, that's a real basic minimum. But if we get that as a start, be fantastic. We've been doing that for a while.
Yeah.
Are there other countries that are faring better in this area?
I'm aware that the Scandinavian countries do really
it's
well
always
this year. Yeah,
such a cliche,
yeah,
but
isn't it? They're much more inclusive with all this year. Much more inclusive. And look, one of the interesting things that a study was done by the Disability Housing Futures Group was that if you design a house properly to be accessible, you have it in a good location, you actually save 5.5 hours of support, and that's 2 hours a week, which can offset any rental costs. And also, for if you're on an NDIS package, that's 5.5 hours less support you're going to require. So the savings to be made all over the place. And having a person with a disability live in the community, being able to work, they're paying taxes. So a whole lot of benefits all around.
So it, that what for me that to when I hear something like that, that really points to the that sort of stigma.
Yeah.
It's like for homeless people, someone, if you're experiencing homelessness, an academic did some research and pointed to if we provided public housing, it would actually save the community money.
Yeah.
From you know, prisons, emergency rooms, and all sorts of other things. So it's not a money issue. Do you think, how much work do we need to do on our culture?
I think it's a continual thing. I think we've moved leaps and bounds, but of course not fast enough for most of us who are living with a disability.
Yeah.
But I think there's much more acceptance now of that we are part of the community and we have a lot to offer, and people do see beyond our disability now. I think that's a big change. I think we're much more visible. We're going to mainstream schools. We're getting educated. We're coming out with tertiary qualifications. We're in the workforce. And I think just being able to see us constantly breaks down what you were saying earlier on, that fear factor.
Yeah.
So I do think that is changing.
What do you think the catalyst for that was?
I would have to say, the International Year of Disability, I think that was a start to ask a lot of questions. And going back a long time, normalisation.
Yeah.
And as a result, the closing down of institutions and people with disabilities living and being part and contributing to the community.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Look, can I just ask you, we're running out of time, but can I ask you one more question, Sharon? How do you feel about because I have an issue, right, when we're dealing with such important things as disability and social inclusion and equality and respect, that it's one is it something that we should be doing every year? And do you feel that, or are you comfortable with one International Day of Disability? How do you feel about that?
I think we need to do it every 365 days of the year. I think it's great to celebrate, but on a personal basis, we have so many international days now.
Yeah.
That, yeah, like they don't quite have the impact they did have 10 years ago.
Yeah.
But I think it's really great to recognise it on a specific day. And like the National Disability Awards, it's wonderful to recognise people with disabilities making a difference in the world. I think those things, that when we can acknowledge work done by people with disabilities in a whole range of areas, not just in the field of disability, I think it's fantastic. And I think it highlights the community that the abilities of people with disabilities rather than the impairment.
Thank you, Sharon. Thank you for contributing to our show today and for making it what it is. Your contribution has been fantastic. Have a nice day and happy Disability Day, International Disability Day.
Thanks a lot.
No worries.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
See you later.
Yeah, I wanted to create more awareness out there about schizophrenia, because I have mild schizophrenia and there is a stigma attached, and people often think, oh, you know, are you violent and all this type of stuff. But I'm just trying to make people aware that we do function in society like everybody else. We just have a condition.
You're listening to 3CR Radio on International Day of Persons with Disabilities. I'm Tom Shakespeare, and have a good day.
I really don't like this concept of teaching people to see the person and not the disability, then why can't people see a person with a disability and not freak out or not feel uncomfortable? You know, it's like that weird backhanded compliment that we get when people say, you know, oh, I don't think of you as disabled because you're my friend or you're really cool or because you're just like me. And can we not be all of those things? Can we not be cool and likeable and people's friends but not also be proud of our disabilities? I kind of hope that we can.
Turn off the radio.
You're listening to 3CR 855 AM on International Day of People with a Disability.
Hey, you're listening to the Mighty Mighty Ruminations on the Mighty Mighty 3CR 855 AM and also streaming at 3cr.org.au. As I said, you're listening to Ruminations with Kelly, Spike and Dazza on this very special International Day of People with a Disability. It's just gone 1:30. We're going to finish up on Ruminations at 2 o'clock today. So now we're going to go to the second half of our special radio interview that Spike and I conducted with Marzi Mars, the Style Machine.
How you going, bro?
Yeah, I died your microphone off there, you can send a cheerio,
hey,
Spike.
Hey, Mars. How you going, man?
Yeah, so we hope you enjoy this special radio interview and we'll be back afterwards.
Let's talk about your music, Mark. So what sort of music do you play and who are you inspired by?
Well, I'm inspired by the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Basically, when I first started, Blood Sugar Sex Magik came out and me and my friends really dug that sort of thing the Red Hot Chili Peppers did. And so I started playing bass and... Yeah, Flea's a pretty cool bass player. I listened a lot to him and he showed me the way, how to groove in a funk sort of sense. And so I took that on board and... John Paul Jones, I listened to the Lemon Song from Led Zeppelin and John Paul Jones inspired me to be melodic on that song, the Lemon Song. Then I got introduced from Suicide Tendencies and I really thought it was cool and Black Flag and all that. And so Suicidal Way of Thinking inspires me to keep going, you know, as a bass player. Even though I copped it, I still keep going because I think that Psycho Mike's lyrics really helped me mentally and emotionally very much. It touched my life. Even though I got sick, the Suicidal for Life album helped me emotionally and mentally to come to terms with the grip of reality in life. You know, it made me feel better. The album Suicidal for Life, I love that album. It's my favourite. Especially the lineup of the band at the time was really cool. Well, you got Soko Maiko on vocals, you got Robert Trujillo on bass, you got Rocky George and Mike Clark, because they put on the Infectious Groove sort of thing, was like a hip hop, funk rock sort of thing. And Infectious Groove, that's my style of bass playing. Also, thanks to Mr. Bungle, because I like the style of songwriting they did, because they would put a punk rock or a funk rock, a bit of jazz in one song. Oh, that's cool, man. I would like to do that too. So many thanks to Mr. Bungle.
Your art, and not just your visual art, but your music, is it you're trying to communicate with a bigger group of people? Is it a way to communicate?
Yes, it is. I like to be go back to saying suicidal mentality. I'd like to make a difference for myself, for the family, for Melbourne, Australia and the world, you know. I don't like depressing things happening like what happened to Paris the other day. So, you know, I try to make a difference, like Psycho Mico might say, you know, to help the world become a better place for the kids and the future and everything, you know.
It's important for you not to go unheard, to have a positive say in what's happening in the world.
Yes, yes, exactly, yeah, that's how I feel, yeah. Like I was saying before, I got sick, so I have to jack back from that sort of scene, and I'm lonely, so I keep going, you know. The love of being recognised as an artist and a musician, I'm happy about that, so it's cool.
So how long have you been making music and making your art?
I started out as a street artist in 1988, so we're in 2015 at the moment, so it's been a long time, and I've learnt a lot about my bass playing style of writing music. I wrote a CD called Sit Down, Shut Up, and it's a half an hour piece of music that I wrote. I'm proud of that, so it's cool. When I first started playing bass, I went to Laylaw Music Store and got some lessons. I did a bit of schooling, actually. I went to the Collingwood TAFE, you know, on Johnson Street. I did a year there and passed a few subjects and failed a few subjects, but I went well, and I stopped going because they taught me a lot at Collingwood TAFE, the Certificate in Musicianship.
That's important because a rest of people would think that this came out of nowhere.
Absolutely not, no. I had to learn. You got to learn. And like I was saying about my songwriting style, I learnt it the last 20 years, you know, of songwriting. I do a lot of songwriting over the years, and I learnt the technical wild style part of being a songwriter. It's like a jazz sense, like John Coltrane, or he's a jazz musician. What does he play? Some sort of horn section thing or something? The jazz dude. John Paul Jones' bass playing in the Lemon Song is just a full-on groove, solo groove. I loved it when I first heard it and said, I want to be like that. But then Mr. Bungle came about in my life and I said, I want to be like that. Then Infectious Grooves came and I said, yes, I want to be like that. So it's a mixture of people that I love, my songwriting anyway.
All the musicians that you've mentioned, is there something that they have in common?
Yeah, I emulate their style of songwriting, really. Suicidals is not my style, it's Infectious Grooves with same people, but I'm an Infectious Groove bass player. It's like a Parliament Funkadelic sort of thing, you know, they learnt it from them, like the Chili Peppers and all that, so that's my style, the funk rock sort of style.
And why do you like that style so much?
Because I used to be a Beastie Boy, basically, yeah. Yeah, I used to be a Beastie Boy, a hip-hopper. Infectious Grooves is hip-hop and punk rock gelled into one sort of thing, and yeah, I took on board that sort of style.
It sounds like you're a very positive person. You like positive music and art.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, like Led Zeppelin, Black Sabbath, Suicidals, Mr. Bungle, you know. Black Sabbath were cool. Led Zeppelin were very cool. I believe myself when Ozzy says something, it's a positive thing to me, what Ozzy says, you know. Ozzy's Scream album, the first song he says, stand up, stay true, keep heart, the future looks to you. So I take that on board and keep going, you know. So he says the right thing, Ozzy, you know. I'm a rock star, I'm
a dealer, I'm a servant, I'm a leader. How important is music and art in your life, Mars?
Well, especially these days, we're after jack back from drugs and alcohol. It's important because I'm lonely. I like to keep going because I love it and I'm lonely. So I push myself to keep going like that because I have to jack back from the sex, drugs and rock and roll thing. I can't do that. So I got to stick to myself, look after mom and, you know, have a bit of friendship around town or something, or keep working means I got friends, you know. I meet people, Brunswick Street Gallery or Whittlesea Art Show, you know, or gig at the park or something, or hopefully this interview will help me pick up my gigging scene in Melbourne, please, because I need a gig, mate.
You've worked so hard to communicate with more than just the people that you're seeing physically, that through your art you can communicate with thousands of people. And is that what you're trying to do?
Exactly, mate. Like the fellas I've been talking about, all these bands and that, they say that. So I like to say it too because I think it's a good idea for myself and the world, you know. There's a few people over the years that do say something, suicidals, infectious and all that. Yeah, it's very important that people need to learn to love, mate. Basically, people like me who want to say something want to be positive for the world, you know, because the world's a special place. Life on Earth's a special place. So my first recording as a Style Machine was called Hell on Earth because I was depressed and pissed off. Then these days I wrote Life on Earth, which is a right thing to say in a happy way, you know, about life on Earth.
Do you produce your own music?
Basically, yes, actually. I had a friend called Mendo who used to own the Jam Hut. I used to go there and jam and do vocals on my own, and he used to say, "How about this and that, that, that?" Oh, yeah, cool, man. So Mendo was a big help back then, about 10 years ago. He was a really cool dude, Mendo. He used to own the Jam Hut, and he helped me a lot getting gigs and teaching me how to songwrite a bit more, you know, melodically in a sense.
How do you produce your own music? What is involved?
It's a good question because I get a piece of paper and a pen and I write down a chord chart, which I learnt in the school in Collingwood TAFE. It's called doing a chord chart. So I write down the scales and style of music I like to play, like Mr. Bungle. Like I might say 10 bars of E and D punk rock, then funk rock in A and G or things like that, you know. I learnt how to write a chord chart. So you can nail it, you know. You write it down, like Peter Tsiompas used to teach me how to write a structure. But these days I do a chord chart. It involves, like I said, you know, like 4 bars punk rock and 6 bars of A minor funk.
What comes after you write the music to get it to the place where it's a CD? What are the steps involved?
Rehearsing, right? Getting it right and learning the chord chart and rehearsing, you know, the chord chart and how it goes and all that. So, yeah.
But how do you get it onto a CD and all the artwork and all that kind of stuff?
Well, yeah, you have to rehearse and record it. I got a digital 8-track in the studio. So last couple of years I've been doing that, doing recording on the digital 8-track and send the master copy to the Jam Hut people and they press it and I do the artwork myself and get the people from Jam Hut to get the artwork done. So, yeah, people from Jam Hut get it pressed and all that for me. Yeah, yeah, it's cool.
What I believe is important is the communication part. And you've said that that's what drives and motivates you also. And that you're interested in sharing a positive message and that you've... From what you've told us, that you're basically producing stuff but on your own.
Yes, yes. I've been saying I'd like to make a difference for myself and the world, really. I love life, you know. I don't want to die yet anyway, you know. I like to just have Melbourne, you know, as an example, be a better place to live, especially what's been happening in the world. I believe that we need to fix up life a bit better. Yeah, so it's my duty I gave to myself and it makes me feel happy and positive, you know.
Do you think that's the role of someone who's an artist is to communicate with the public or do you think it's just producing art for the sake of art?
Well, some people it is and some people it's not, you know. Like people we mentioned in the interview, Ozzy and people like that, they're positive, so it's a cool thing. If they wish to say something special and good. That's why Ozzy's a legend, basically. Some people like to say something right, or there's a lot of people that just like sell sex, drugs and rock and roll just to make money and be famous, which is wrong, I believe. So I try to do the punk rock sense of things, you know. Yeah. So it's good to have a message, I think, people in art and music, yeah.
And that message would be, again,
to help the world be a better place, you know. Peace, love and happiness.
How many albums have you produced?
A lot. About 20 or 25, really, in the last 10 years, 10 or 15 years. I've done a lot of recording, bit of gigging, but a lot of recording because I can't get a gig. It's like Soko Moka might say, they try to ban us from LA, but every dog has its day. Now I'm waiting for my day to come to start gigging again in Melbourne, yeah. But I'd like to be at a cafe on a Saturday afternoon. Now I'm not that sort of person and go to Festival Hall or something. No, I know that. So just to get a cool gig at a cafe somewhere in Melbourne would be cool, man. On a Saturday afternoon, I'd do some free jazz and the Infectious Grooves mentality of style. And I'm a good jazz player these days because I learnt it after practicing.
What makes it hard to get gigs like in cafes?
Well, I've been trying to around Doreen. They said no because I'm a bit heavy, a bit brutal, like in a Black Sabbath sort of sense. I like playing punk rock and I can put up Black Sabbath and Led Zeppelin in a four bar riff, you know what I mean? So people are scared of that, you know, like, you know, Black Sabbath's hardcore. The truth is brutal and people are scared of that sort of style of music, so. But, you know, I believe it's all right, you know, just to, because I've been playing at the park in Doreen and kids and people there everywhere, they enjoy it. So I think to myself, why not? Why not, you know?
Do you get compliments from people when you play in the park?
Yeah, sometimes. Not a lot, but there's a lot of people there sometimes and they just look after the kids, or the kids are on the swings and things like that, and they just enjoy me playing there. But I think I'll go back to recording again because I think I don't want to go to the park and cause a fuss, because I'm a high-entity person now after all these years. So I'd like to try and get a gig at a cafe or something, like I said before, you know. It'd be cool, man.
Have you done much busking over the years?
Last few years I have, yeah, in Doreen and Latrobe Market, placed there every Sunday morning, and I used to jam there and do my free jazz in a punk rock, funky sort of way, and I didn't make any money at all, which was sad, but I can't go back there because I can't afford it.
Is it difficult living out here in Doreen for your music and your art?
No, there's nothing wrong with that. No, it's pretty cool, man. Yeah, I've got a taxi card, so I'm able to go out into the city and all that half price on the taxi, so that's cool, man. I'm grateful for that, so I can get around and do some work.
You said earlier that one of your earliest albums was quite a kind of dark album because you were feeling quite depressed, and your latest one is very positive. So has your music and feelings changed over the years through your music?
Yes, it has a lot. Sometimes when I release something, it's happy, happy, happy. And when I did that first hardcore Hell on Earth EP, I was depressed state of mind, but when I released it around the world, now off my own bat, I was happy and I got over that sort of depression state of mind, you know. So it's cool to say something, you know. I love Fugazi, that's what I'd like to say to end the interview. I love Fugazi, the state of mind in the music scene, because that's where I'm at. I feel like I'm a Fugazi dude.
Well, if you listen to 3CR, clap your hands. If you listen to 3CR, clap your hands. If you listen to 3CR, yes, I know where you are. If you listen to 3CR, clap your hands. If you listen to 3CR, clap your hands. If you listen to 3CR, clap your hands. Well, check out the happy vibe. They're gonna ring up and subscribe. If you listen to 3CR,
flap your ears.
What? Who the hell is that?
Flap your ears.
What are you talking about? I ain't no elephant. Get out of here. This is handmade radio.
Buy a ticket in the 3CR Summer Radiothon Raffle, and not only will you be supporting independent radio, but you could be in the running to win a new bike kindly donated by Reed Cycles. Reed Cycles have stores in North Melbourne, Windsor and Collingwood. Check out their website, reedcycles.com.au. Call the station now on 9419 8377 to get your tickets. Reed Cycles is a 3CR supporter.
You're listening to 3CR Radio on International Day of Persons with Disabilities. I'm Tom Shakespeare, and have a good day.
Yeah, I wanted to create more awareness out there about schizophrenia, because I have mild schizophrenia, and there is a stigma attached, and people often think, oh, you know, are you violent and all this type of stuff. But I'm just trying to make people aware that we do function in society like everybody else. We just have a condition.
There is a real assumption that people with disabilities won't have relationships and won't develop a sexual identity as everybody else in the community develops.
They call me special, they call me crip, they call me mom, they call me special, that's not my name.
You're listening to 3CR Community Radio, celebrating International Day of People with a Disability.
It was a hot day in February. It was time for the beach. Don't be fooled by the weather in Melbourne. In summer it gets quite hot. Nice time for a swim. We don't get to do that.
Well, that was Hot Day in February by the Hacketts. And that's just about it for Ruminations this week. But coming up next, we have Why Self-Advocacy Matters, a forum and Q&A organised by SARU, the Self-Advocacy Resource Unit. The forum was held in Melbourne in November, looking at the importance of self-advocacy in the disability movement. And, of course, do not forget that today at 4 o'clock on the steps of Parliament House, the Homeless Persons Union will be holding a sleepout. So if you'd like to come and support the homeless, please do come to Parliament House at 4 o'clock today or any time after that. Anyway, that's it for dear old Daz and Spike and young Kelly.
It's been a great show.
It has.
You enjoyed yourself, Spike?
Yep. It's a great show.
And
yep.
We've learnt a lot.
Yeah, I did.
We have.
And we've heard some amazing voices.
Indeed.
And we've heard some great music.
True.
So to our fellow 3CR programmers, have a great day, have some great shows. And to our listeners, thanks once again, always for tuning in to Ruminations on the Mighty 3CR. And Daz, you'll be here next week.
I will indeed. Next week at 12 p.m. on Thursday.
Take care of each other, people.
Yeah, so I'll cross you over to the next program. But before then, I'll just play a couple of last voices and... cheers. Thanks for tuning in. Bye-bye.
Love ya.
In one of the most enlightened and wealthiest nations in the world, it is possible for persons with disability to die of starvation in specialist disability services, to be raped or assaulted without any reasonable prospect of these crimes being detected, investigated, or prosecuted by the legal system, and to have their children removed by child protection authorities on the prejudiced assumption that disability simply equates with incompetent parenting.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.